Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I'm your host Jack Johnson alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our two presenting sponsors, first starting with Iron Horse Bar and Grill located on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. They've got great drink specials running 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and a reverse happy hour Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. 12 a.m. So be sure to go on down to Iron Horse Bar and Grill on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. Also a shout out to Garrettson and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You will find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Well, I will have to at some point pull up the audio of things I was saying yesterday about this national championship game. Never to bet against Alabama, never to bet against Nick Saban, and never to bet against Bryce Young. However, if you decided to disagree with me or you were that high on Georgia, you would have won a lot of money because the Georgia Bulldogs last night, thanks to a game-ending pick six, basically, that made it a 8-point game into a 15-point game, they basically controlled Alabama. That defense was much different than they were the first time around in the SEC championship game. They hold Alabama to 18 points. They pick off Bryce Young twice. And Georgia wins its first national title in over 40 years as they beat the Crimson Tide 33-18. A 20-point fourth quarter for the Bulldogs. I mean, I guess it's not like Georgia was some low-end SEC school. They were dominating the country all the way up until they played Alabama in the SEC championship game. They were undefeated, number one in the country. But then when Alabama really showed that they still were Alabama, they're still the king of college football, you know, I at least sat there and thought, that's pretty scarring. That's scarring for a team like Georgia, who knew this was one of the best seasons they've ever had, but yet in the end, that SEC championship game, they still couldn't overcome Alabama. But having only one loss, they still were going to get their chance in the college football playoff. And when they got there, they handled business in pounding Michigan. Alabama got Cincinnati, but Georgia got Michigan. And Michigan, for as great as they were in the Big Ten all season long, winning the Big Ten championship, they really showed that they were nowhere near the level that Georgia was. And then going into last night, though they beat Michigan by 23 points and Alabama beat Cincinnati by 21 points, I still felt confident in Alabama. Because when I compared these two quarterbacks, Bryce Young, Stetson Bennett, it was sort of a head and shoulders above type of comparison with Bryce Young. I mean, Bryce Young was ridiculous this year. Won the Heisman. And Stetson Bennett, to start the year, wasn't even a starter, I don't think. I'm pretty sure JT Daniels was a starter up until he got hurt. Georgia, yes, they still have the same type of size of the player. Like, their offensive line doesn't look much different than Alabama's. Their defensive line doesn't look much different than Alabama's. But there's always something about Alabama that puts fear in the eyes of opposing teams. Last night, Georgia was not scared of Alabama. In fact, at times it looked like Alabama was a little bit stunned by what Georgia was doing to them. And this was a field goal game. First half, it was 9-6, Alabama leading. Then Georgia scores, then Alabama scores, and you're going, okay, after that fumble that Stetson Bennett had, and then Alabama goes down and scores, you're going, all right, that's probably where Alabama takes off. Maybe this offense has a couple of nice drives, they extend their lead. And I thought Alabama would score over 25 points and cover and win this game. But that Georgia defense, the best in the country, they fixed every problem they had in the SEC championship game and pretty much controlled what Alabama was doing. Bryce Young did not look comfortable when they were getting pressure on Bryce Young. He didn't have much time. He was rolling out to his right, having to throw it away a lot, or trying to force it into coverage. They forced Bryce Young to throw the ball 57 times last night. But the average per completion, the average yardage per completion, was only 6.5. One touchdown, two interceptions. Now, when you pull up Bryce Young's stats this year, or his game log, if you want to go with that, do you know how many times Bryce Young has thrown the ball over 50 times? There was only one other game this year that Bryce Young threw the ball over 50 times. It was against Auburn in that 4-overtime game where they won 24-22. But you look back, that was a game Alabama nearly and should have lost. And that's kind of the common notion, though. When you look at stats like that, Justin Herbert on Sunday night threw the ball 64 times. Did the Chargers win? No. Go to one of Patrick Mahomes' highest totals in terms of passes in a game. One that really sticks out to me, I remember it, was Buffalo, I believe. This year at Arrowhead Stadium, Sunday Night Football against Buffalo. I think Patrick Mahomes threw the ball like 55, 56 times. And his completion percentage was just above 50. Because when you're trailing, when you're having to throw the ball a lot, when the running game isn't working, your quarterback has to throw the ball 50 to 60 times a game. Patrick Mahomes in college, I think, threw, 70 at one point? I think he had 70 passes in that wild shootout against Oklahoma. Bryce Young has thrown the ball a lot. Like, he's had games where he's thrown over 40, over 45, and Alabama's, of course, won that game. Their only loss this year, or at least their loss before Georgia last night against Texas A&M, Bryce Young threw the ball 48 times. And arguably his best game all season. And you know what? It was his best game all season against Arkansas. 31 of 40, 559 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. Quarterback rating of 236.1. Right? Only throwing 40 passes. I think 35 to 40, that's when Alabama's at its best. But when you're asking him to throw it 57 times, you know Georgia's defense is doing something right. And last night, they were pushing all the right buttons. Now, the score is a little bit different than what the game was really like. Up until that final pick six that Bryce Young had, Alabama was going down to try and tie the game, go into overtime, score the touchdown, go for two. But when we look at this box score and go, Georgia won 33-18, you'd think Georgia dominated the whole game. Though that's the score, and though that's not really the case of how close it was, Alabama really couldn't do much all game. I mean, you go to quarter by quarter, they had 3 points in the first quarter. Then they had 6 points. They were shut out in the third quarter, and then they got 9 points. So couldn't even score in double digits. Georgia shut out in the first quarter, then scored 6 and 7, and they had that 20-point showing in the fourth quarter. It just was a game I didn't expect to play out that way. For as confident as you can be in Alabama, you have to give an immense amount of credit to Georgia, that coaching staff, Stetson Bennett. I mean, people were making jokes about Stetson Bennett in the first half. How Georgia had all this talent around them, and yet they couldn't do anything with their quarterback. He was limited. But he finishes the game 17 of 26, 224 yards, 8.6 yards per completion, 2 touchdowns, no picks. I think they can ask that from Stetson Bennett to win a football game. But to beat Alabama in the way they did, it was more of this defense showing that whatever happened in Atlanta, the SEC championship game, whatever happened down there, it wasn't going to happen again. And I guess, who has the advantage in round two usually? Is it the team that won, or is it the team that lost and can kind of learn from those mistakes, learn what went wrong? I mean, I thought going in, Alabama had the upper hand because they go, if we put up 40-plus points on them one time, who the hell says we can't do it again? What is preventing them from letting us put up 30-plus, 35-plus points? And Georgia, though that seems now like a little bit of a fluke game and giving up 41 points, they fixed every single one of those problems. The run defense, I thought, was pretty solid. They only allowed 30 rushing yards on 28 carries. Now, that's because Bryce Young, they have in the box score, is having negative 43 yards. But they held Brian Robinson Jr. to 68 carries on 22, or 68 yards on 22 carries, 3.1 yards per carry. Trey Sanders, 2 carries, 5 yards. That's doing their job. And when you look at their receiving core, Alabama had one guy over 100-yard receiving. The next closest, 65 yards, Jameson Williams. So their secondary, doing a great job of not getting flagged as often. Getting to the quarterback. I mean, yeah, Bryce Young says right there, negative 43 rushing yards. Georgia's defensive front was impressive. They were solid. And it's funny because I was watching the game last night with my roommate, and I was thinking about, you know, how does Alabama still even, like, have the motivation for these games? I know they do. They're Alabama. They have a dynasty. But they've been there so often, and they've, you know, they lost to Clemson big one time. Didn't they lose Clemson, like, 44-16 a couple of years ago in the national championship to Trevor Lawrence? It was kind of when Trevor Lawrence really burst onto the scene. But it's like, you don't even really bat an eye. Like, it's definitely a little bit shocking when Alabama loses, anytime they lose. But Georgia, it felt like not having a title in 40-plus years and as good as a program Georgia is, that game meant a lot more to them. Like, sure, Alabama is crushed about this loss. Anytime you lose in the national championship, it's a crushing loss. But they're going to be back there next year. There's really no denying it. I would bet house money right now that Alabama will be playing in the final game of the college football season next year. Can't say the same about Georgia. But the important thing is getting it done, beating Alabama when you actually get there, because you don't know the next time you will. When Ohio State's there, when Michigan has a chance, Georgia, you know, Oregon, USC maybe next year. When you get there, it's about doing what Georgia did last night, because you really don't know the next time you're going to be there. Alabama is going to be there, it feels like, until Nick Saban retires. And they'll probably still have a little bit of a run whenever he does retire. Because that's just the way Alabama is. They lose one or two games every single year. They put themselves in that spot year in and year out. They're going to be back there next year. They 100% will be in the college football playoff. And I don't even know who they'd play. But I think they're going to be back in the national title game. Georgia, though I can't really say the same about the Bulldogs, hell of a win last night in doing what they did to Alabama. First title in 41 years. Tip your cap. Georgia's a very powerful program. They're a powerhouse. It always feels like they are in the top 10, top 5 in the SEC, but they're no Alabama. And that didn't matter last night. Marco, any lasting thoughts before we go to break about last night's national championship game with the Georgia Bulldogs beating the Alabama Crimson Tide 33-18?
There was a blowout before it was almost a blowout, you know? I really thought that Georgia kind of got screwed a little bit on that opening drive where they returned the forward pass that they reviewed. Or I guess it was a fumble recovered for a touchdown for Georgia, and then they reviewed it and said it was a forward pass. So it just was – it was Georgia's game from the get-go, and their red zone defense stepped up big in this game for the Bulldogs. Bryce Young wasn't able to convert anything down there inside the 20, and I thought that was huge for Alabama or for Georgia, because Bama was making their trips down the field. They were getting all the yardage that they wanted to get into scoring position, but when it came down to it, Georgia wasn't letting Bama roll into the end zone and make this game closer. It was really on. This was the type of game where the defense, I think, needed to show up better than they did in the SEC championship, and the offense just had to do what they usually do in order for Georgia to win this game. And let's not forget, Bama did still have a shot at the end, but once again, the X factor, that Georgia defense, how good they've been all season, were able to end it on that closing drive that drive where Bama was looking to march down and tie the game up. But, you know, props to the Bulldogs. They showed us why they were the best team in college football yesterday. Yet again, it makes me think that SEC championship game, maybe there was only one game plan that could truly beat this Georgia team. And Nick Saban used it right there in that SEC championship. Because remember, Bama needed to almost win that game to make it into the playoffs this year. So it was a slow start, very defensive heavy in the first half. But then there was enough on enough play calls for both teams to spark some fireworks in this game. But in the end, Jameson Williams leaving the game with an injury played a factor for Bama, took away Bryce Young's favorite target, but two interceptions and not being able to score in the red zone, that's going to kill. That hurts. That's going to hurt you. And you're not going to win football games when you don't convert that kind. When you don't convert on those situations in football. So, it was fun. It was fun to keep an eye on the game yesterday. A lot of things to point out. We really saw two coaches who showed us why yesterday one is the best of all time in college football, and then Kirby Smart, one of the best younger coaches right now in college football also, and good on him to finally get one from his mentor. And crazy to think Nick Saban, although he lost yesterday, still has 7 national championships as a head coach.
That number alone is just wild. I think even more so, like, this game came down to a pick six at the very end, and I think when I was watching the post game on ESPN, it said that loss last night, 15 points, was the second largest loss in the Nick Saban era at Alabama. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and go through all the seasons, but I think number one would be that loss to Clemson when they lost 44-16.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the second largest loss, and they had a shot to win it with under a minute to go. Like, that's wild to me. Even when Alabama loses, it's not a fluke, just 30-point loss. It's within 5 points almost all the time. But last night, man, 15-point loss to Georgia. Georgia's defense was fantastic. Stetson Bennett, though you got criticized early on, you finished that game strong, and now you're a national champion. After being a walk-on, transferred to a JUCO, then yeah, came back to Georgia,
yeah,
wasn't a starter this year, then got that spot, and then hoisted the national championship trophy at the end of the season.
There you go. Stetson Bennett, how about this? First former walk-on to beat Nick Saban, coach team, as a starting quarterback since Brian Greasy in 1997 for Michigan. Michigan went on to win a national title that year. Only two walk-on quarterbacks to beat a Nick Saban coach team. And that wasn't even an Alabama team. That was when Saban coached at Michigan State. So, all props to the quarterback Bennett last night. Did what he had to do in that game.
He really did. He's that type of guy where when you got that much talent around you, you don't need to throw for 500 yards. Mm. Don't turn it over, and I know he did turn it over, but it didn't hurt him in the long run. Facing Alabama and having that type of game and winning by 15, that's enough credit in its own. You beat Alabama, it doesn't really matter how you play. If you beat them, you played well enough to win that football game. So credit to the Georgia Bulldogs after winning their first title in 41 years. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll get into our preview of Kansas and Iowa State tonight as the Jayhawks are back at Allen Fieldhouse and break down the NFC playoff bracket as we did AFC yesterday. Now we'll switch to the NFC. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our third presenting sponsor, an Active Family Chiropractic. If you are dealing with a neck, back, shoulder, or any kind of issue, do not hesitate and go in today. Call or just go in and schedule the appointment. Their office is located on 135th in Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. I had a shoulder problem about a year ago. It was a pinched nerve. I play softball. I play adult softball. Really fun, but when you're throwing the ball a lot, this sounds bad. I'm playing adult softball, but it is really fun. But I had a pinched nerve. It was killing me. It felt like my shoulder was going to detach from my body. But went in there, and after a couple visits, felt the best I ever have throwing any sort of football, softball, baseball, didn't matter. Felt amazing after that. And one thing that you have sometimes with chiropractors, they'll try to scam you into more visits. You know, oh, I can tell that you're not quite there yet, so come in for another visit. When you are fixed and you feel good there, you'll be done. You can pretty much stop the scheduling right there. It's a great place to be. It's easy to schedule an appointment. I have nothing but glowing reviews about it because I had a lower back problem, shoulder problem. Both of them were fixed within a couple of visits. So do not hesitate today and call and schedule an appointment at Active Family Chiropractic. You can call that number at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. The Kansas Jayhawks are back in action tonight against the Iowa State Cyclones at Allen Fieldhouse. They're coming off their loss on Saturday down at Lubbock, Texas, to the Texas Tech Red Raiders. I did a show on Sunday morning over at 8:10. And I talked a little bit recapping that game. It was on Sports Sunday. You know, usually it's Sports Saturday, but this one was Sports Sunday. And we went over a little bit of what happened down in Lubbock. The Red Raiders were without two of their leading scorers in that game, and yet Kansas really didn't have a shot at the end of the game to win it. They lost by 8 points. And you're starting to go, why? How does that happen? Yes, is it tough to win down in Lubbock? Of course it is. Texas Tech was a ranked team, 25th in the country. But they were just coming off a game where they scored less than 60 points against Iowa State on the road without those same players. But yet this Kansas defense right now, it's very spotty. There's not many guys on the floor you can look at and say, that's a game stopper. Like, you can go on 10, 12, 14-0 runs because this defense is cohesive. They'll get a stop. What Texas Tech did on Saturday is bully the hell out of Kansas. Way more physical. And that's being a little bit positive on this, that type of game. That's putting it a little bit lightly. Bullying the hell out of Kansas. Offensive rebounds. Getting in the post. Getting any shot they wanted inside of 5 feet. That's out-physicaling another team. And Texas Tech did that. And you know what? Iowa State is not much different than Texas Tech. They have a good defense. I think Bill Self yesterday said their defense is just as good as Texas. So you're going to have your work cut out for them. Right now, though, more so than the defense, the main problem in Lawrence, Kansas, the main problem with this team, and the reason the ceiling is a little bit stunted at the moment, the absolute ceiling of this team is, of course, winning a national title. They've got the veterans, they've got the talent, they've got the coach. They should be able to put themselves in a position at the end of the year to play for a national title. What Saturday showed me is that they can't get there if this front court continues to play the way they do. And that's Mitch Lightfoot, that's David McCormick, that's Zach Clements off the bench. If you are getting next to nothing from your big men, you can't beat Baylor. It's going to be tough to beat Texas. Right? There's going to be games that you drop. I mean, right now, Kentucky's at the end of this month. Kentucky's got one of the best big men in college basketball in Oscar Tshiebwe, who is at West Virginia, averaging over 15 rebounds a game. Now, I know Kansas would probably like to go with some five-guard look, going out and maybe putting Jalen Wilson in the starting lineup, you know, putting Remy Martin, once he's completely healthy, back in the lineup. So you'd have DeJuan Harris, Remy Martin, Ochai Agbaji, Christian Brown, Jalen Wilson. If you wanted that five-guard look, I don't know how you're going to fare against teams that have an Oscar Tshiebwe or go up against Baylor, who can, just like Texas Tech, bully you. Like, that's where that ceiling can be limited. Because if you're getting 4 points on 1 of 5 shooting from David McCormick and 4 rebounds, you can't have that. Mitch Lightfoot cannot start a game and not take a single shot and have 3 fouls in the first half. This is where that depth needs to be important for Kansas. And when things weren't going their way down in Lubbock, all they could rely on was Ochai Agbaji, who was once again fantastic. But if Remy Martin's struggling to go offensively, if Christian Brown has 4 points with 5 minutes left in the second half, I'm not liking the chances anymore. And I can even go back. You could pull up the audio. After their win in Stillwater over Oklahoma State, I said this Kansas team has that mentality where they can end the game when they want. They can kill you when they want. And then they follow up with that showing down in Lubbock, Texas. That was not the same mentality. That wasn't the same Kansas team where they let teams hang around until 6-7 minutes ago and they go, all right, let's turn it on. Tech showed on Saturday, no, Kansas can't do that to everybody. And they're right. If Kansas doesn't have any production from the front court, they can't have that mentality. Because you know what other teams can do when they're struggling offensively? They can score inside. They can continuously go back in the paint and score inside. The thing I'm looking forward to the most tonight from this game, of course, to see how Kansas responds. But more than that, are we going to see a different lineup tonight? Will there be a five-guard look tonight? Right out the gates. I'm sure at some point on the floor, there will be five guards out there. But will David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot both start on the bench? It certainly is a possibility. And you know what? If this Kansas offense looks better than it did in Stillwater, looks better than it did a couple of weeks ago, hell, stick with it. Because David McCormick's best game this season came off the bench. Mitch Lightfoot's best game this season came off the bench. If Jalen Wilson can give you even a little bit of what he did on Saturday, once every two games, that's probably worth starting over what you're getting in the front court. And that's just the reality of this whole season for Kansas. We're far enough along now where we can go, not all of a sudden is David McCormick or Mitch Lightfoot going to give you 15 and 10 on a nightly basis. They can give you that maybe once every five games. They can have that spurt. David McCormick had 17 and 14 or 15 against Oklahoma State. But it's the consistency problem. If you can't count on them to do that once every two games, you got to look elsewhere. And I think the frustrating thing is both those guys are seasoned veterans. They've been around a very long time, around this program a very long time. They should be at their peak performance right now. This should be the best they've been since they've been at Kansas. But right now it's showing that they simply just aren't playing very well. And Kansas, if they're going to compete for a Big 12 title, because Baylor right now is the clear runaway favorite, if they're going to have any chance, at some point very soon, a switch is going to have to be flipped with that front court. And if you're playing this way, if this front court isn't giving you much going into late February, I'm really starting to feel anxious and nervous about what's going to happen in March. You know, you draw an 8 seed that's got a 7-footer or a guy that's 6'10", 280 pounds. That's just a sheer physical presence. How can Kansas stop that? Right now, I don't have the confidence to say they can. They get into foul trouble. Who can you go to off the bench? Zach Clements, I think he'll be great at Kansas, but he's a true freshman. He's not there yet. This solely relies on what Mitch Lightfoot and David McCormick can bring you. Tonight, are we going to see a better version of them? Or are we going to see the version that we saw against Texas Tech? That'll tip off tonight at 7 o'clock, Kansas and Iowa State. The Jayhawks ranked 9th in the country now. Iowa State, who also came off a loss down in Norman against Oklahoma, they are ranked 15th. But an impressive start for Iowa State this season. They were predicted to be near the bottom of the Big 12. But should be a good environment, a good showdown tonight between two, I guess you could say, minor rivals. I know there was a little bit of time when Fred Hoiberg was there, Georges Niang, Naz Long at Iowa State. There were some good rivalry games between Kansas and Iowa State. Maybe it's the start of it again. If Iowa State's on its way back, tonight we'll get a true look into this Cyclones team. But again, tips off at 7 p.m. Yesterday, we're going to switch back into the NFL now. Yesterday, we had our look and our prediction to the AFC and what's going to happen, or at least what we think is going to happen. Marco thought it'll be Chiefs and Titans in the AFC Championship game, so Patrick Mahomes will play in his first road game down in Nashville. I had Kansas City hosting the Cincinnati Bengals, round two of Mahomes and Burrow. Now, I think, Marco, you did have the Chiefs beating Tennessee and Nashville, right, going back to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Wouldn't want it any other way.
That's true, and I can't really argue with that because I have Kansas City over Cincinnati, who you could argue is a tougher opponent. So The reality is both of us have Kansas City in the Super Bowl this year. Different paths. Marco has a little bit more upsets on his AFC playoff bracket side. I didn't as much. I think I had every higher seed winning in the first round, in that wild card round. Marco had the Patriots beating the Bills, I believe it was. He had Cincinnati beating the Raiders, so it would have been Cincinnati going to Nashville. Or no, sorry, excuse me. It would be New England going to Nashville, playing the Titans, and Kansas City getting Cincinnati in the divisional round. Chiefs beating the Bengals in the divisional round. Titans beating the Patriots. I had all the higher seeds winning, where I had Cincinnati going to Tennessee. I had Buffalo coming to Kansas City in the divisional round. Kansas City beating Buffalo. And, of course, the Bengals beating the Titans. Now when we look at the NFC, this one I will say that the top seeds in this one, Green Bay and Tampa Bay, they have one of the easier paths to getting to the divisional round. Of course, Green Bay's already there. They've got the bye. But the interesting thing, and the comical thing of all of this, is for weeks leading up to the postseason, I said the AFC was a gauntlet. Right? This postseason, whoever the seven seed is going to be, is going to be a tough matchup. But then Pittsburgh squeaked in, and Kansas City gets Pittsburgh in the wild card round. Tampa Bay is in a similar spot with Kansas City. The Buccaneers get to open up hosting Philly. The Eagles, who went 9-8 this year. So Tampa Bay, like Kansas City in the wild card round, I don't see much reason in how they're going to lose. How is Tom Brady going to lose in the wild card round to the Philadelphia Eagles? Yes, has Tom Brady lost to Philly before? He has. Has he lost to a Philly team that had Nick Foles? He has. And I think Jalen Hurts is a very dynamic quarterback. But going to Tampa Bay, beating the reigning Super Bowl champ, much easier said than done. So in the first round, this wild card round, I'm going to take Tampa Bay over Philly. This one has my interest piqued probably more than any wild card game, because it's one that I actually think I want to pick this upset, but I know I've picked against Dallas so many times. But Dallas drawing San Francisco is an unfair matchup for the Cowboys. That San Francisco team is no slouch. They just went in with the season on the line. Jimmy G dealing with a thumb injury, and they beat the Rams in L.A. They had their backs against the wall many a times. They were in Cincinnati, beat the Bengals in overtime. And this Cowboys team, they really haven't, I guess, felt like they fared well against some of those top-tier teams in a while, actually. Because let's go back to their last couple of weeks. What happened with this Dallas Cowboys team? They just recently went on the road to Philly and won 51-26. Right? In Philly, they are a playoff team. So you can give credit where credit's due. They lost to Arizona the week before that, 25-22. This was the stretch of games they played for the 4 weeks prior to that. All of December. This was their December schedule. Washington at home on December 26th. December 19th, on the road against the Giants. December 12th, on the road against Washington. December 2nd, on the road against New Orleans. Not one of those teams made the postseason. Now, on Thanksgiving, remember, that was their loss. They had a four-game winning streak right there in December. They didn't lose in December. They lost to the Raiders 36-33, and they lost to the Chiefs 19-9, both playoff teams. So three of their last four teams they lost to, they were playoff teams. Chiefs, Raiders, Cardinals, all made the playoffs. They did just beat Philly. But I think it's been a while. It has been a while since Dallas has really thoroughly impressed me. They've been able to rout Washington. They rout Philly. They put up 50-plus points. I think that offense is spectacular. That defense is athletic. San Francisco, though, that pass rush, that running game, that offensive line, when healthy, they're dangerous. I actually think San Francisco knocks out Dallas in the wild card round, which is very frustrating for Dallas fans, considering the way this season started for them. But San Francisco's tough, right? This is not a slouch six seed. They're going to be very tough to win. If Dallas wins in the wild card round, that's one of the more impressive playoff victories so far to start both sides of the bracket. So I think San Francisco tops Dallas, Tampa, and San Francisco moving on. Between the Rams and the Cardinals, If D-Hop isn't back yet, I'm going to give the edge to the Rams because I think that loss to San Francisco was a little bit of a fluke, right? They were going for the division win, but LA either way was going to get a home playoff game. I know Arizona won down there earlier this season, but I think the Rams are going to be able to top the Cardinals, knock out Kyler Murray, knock out Cliff Kingsbury, end that Cinderella season for the Cardinals. So the teams I have moving on, Tampa, the Rams, and the 49ers. Now you factor in Green Bay. So Green Bay, the one seed, hosting the 49ers. Tampa Bay would be hosting the Rams in divisional round. Green Bay is, I'm a little bit skeptical on Green Bay. But I think San Francisco, after beating Dallas, I don't see them going on the road in Lambeau, freezing weather, and trusting Jimmy G to beat Aaron Rodgers. I feel like that game has a little bit of a feel of just one team is out of gas. Right, the 49ers having to really play well down the stretch in the regular season, get into the postseason, pull off a big upset against Dallas. But I think their story would end in Lambeau against Green Bay. Now with Tampa in L.A., the Rams would be going on the road down to the Sunshine State and face the Buccaneers. This will be a little bit of a shock. This is where Tampa Bay's season ends. I feel like the Rams will have a little bit more firepower. I know Tampa Bay's been great. They're 13-4, defending Super Bowl champs. But we all thought, too, that Kansas City last year at 14-2, and really they only lost one true game in the regular season, that they were going to be able to march their way to the Super Bowl and handle Tampa Bay with ease. But you know what? Sometimes it's just not that easy. And actually, most of the time, it's not that easy. Since playing Buffalo, here's who Tampa Bay's gotten. Carolina, the Jets, Carolina, and New Orleans. And they lost to the New Orleans Saints 9-0. Like the Cowboys, haven't had much competition since facing a playoff team. It will have been over a month since the Tampa Bay Buccaneers played a postseason team. December 12th. They'll get Philly, of course, on Sunday. That'll kick off at noon. But they're going to get by the Eagles, I think. But then they're going to face this Rams team with Matt Stafford, with OBJ, with Cooper Kupp. I think this Rams team, though they just lost, they'd won five in a row before that. I just like where the Rams are at. I think the Rams would be the team to go on the road. I think they're one of the few teams in the NFC that can go on the road and beat Tampa Bay. I think they get it done, setting up an NFC championship game between the Packers and the Rams. This is where I think I will ride the momentum of L.A. I think L.A. still going into Lambeau, and it'll be back-to-back years. Aaron Rodgers was playing an NFC championship game at home. You're not getting Tom Brady this time, but you are getting the Rams. Matt Stafford has never been in a situation like this. And that, most of the time, I'd think, okay, I'm giving the edge to who is soon to be the MVP of the league, I think, in Aaron Rodgers. The thing I can never get over, though, with this Packers team is that point differential. What I looked at it a couple of weeks ago. Like the Packers, though they got the one seed, it's very similar to the team that they were back in the Chiefs Super Bowl run when they got thrashed by San Francisco in the NFC Championship game. They were 13-3. They won a lot of games. But at the end of the day, they weren't impressive enough or scared teams enough to overcome a scrappy, a team that hasn't been there like a 49ers team. And this time it's the Rams. Well, they were in the Super Bowl a few years ago. This is a different Rams team. This has more firepower. And when I look at their schedule, the wins, probably the best wins they've had this season, on the road against Cincinnati. You could argue against the Rams at home. They have played before. Packers won 36-28. They won on the road in Baltimore, but that was without Lamar Jackson. And other than that, no, I guess the Cardinals. I forgot about that Cardinals game on Thursday Night Football. 3-4 wins, I think. Those are really impressive wins. Now, any win in the NFL is a good win. I just feel like I don't know if the Packers have enough to get back to the Super Bowl. And I feel like their story ends at Lambeau Field for the second straight year in the NFC Championship game. So I got the Rams moving on. So therefore, my prediction is Chiefs and the Rams in the Super Bowl. Marco, now I'll turn it over to you. How do you see this NFC playoff bracket filling out?
I have the Bucks beating the Eagles, the Cowboys over the 49ers, the Cardinals over the Rams. Give me the Cowboys over Tampa Bay and the divisional. Give me Packers over Cardinals. And then give me the Green Bay Packers over the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC Championship. Mike McCarthy going up against his old team in Green Bay. But I think it's just that year for the Packers. They've have made, four or five NFC Championships since their Super Bowl against Pittsburgh, and have not made it back since that last Super Bowl win over the Steelers back in 2011, I believe. It's just crazy to think Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks of our generation, and only has been to one Super Bowl. I think he gets the green back in there, and so it's going to be a Chiefs and Packers Super Bowl, and we'll finally get that State Farm matchup that we want. I think the Packers have just been the better football team. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if Dallas would win. I just think those two teams right there have been playing their best football of late in this regular season. You mentioned L.A. going on a five-game winning streak, winning five of their last six to end the regular season. I just think as a complete team and a team that doesn't make many mistakes, I trust Aaron Rodgers and Dak Prescott a little bit more than I do with Matthew Stafford leading this L.A. team down the stretch late in the postseason.
And Matt Stafford has had those games where three interceptions, one touchdown, that's not good enough to win you anything in the postseason. What I do find interesting, last point in this AFC playoff picture, you and I both disagreed that the team you have in the NFC and the AFC championship game, I had losing in the first round.
Yeah.
Where I had the Cowboys losing in the wild card round, I had the Titans losing in the divisional round, but that would both be their first playoff game. It's crazy how that is playing out, but we'll just see exactly what happens. That all starts on Saturday with the NFL beginning its postseason. The Chiefs, of course, will play on Sunday night at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That'll kick off at 7:15. But we'll see how that NFC playoff picture really breaks down. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll get into what head coaching openings are the best and what head coaching opportunities are the worst. And then, of course, we'll finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I found this article last night, I believe it was, or excuse me, I'm wrong on that. I found it this morning because this came out at 5:11 a.m. So I did. I couldn't remember if it was late last night or early this morning. But it was on the USA Today by Nate Davis, ranking the NFL's six open head coaching jobs from best to worst. And, you know, I do dispute some of these openings because I simply just think that sometimes, though the quarterback may be great, the salary cap could be an issue. The weapons around that quarterback could be an issue. And turning around a bad franchise is very tough to do in this league, especially when you look at some of those teams' divisions. But right now, here's where he ranks all the teams with head coaching openings right now. Number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number two, the Las Vegas Raiders. Number three, the Miami Dolphins. Number four, the Denver Broncos. Number five, the Minnesota Vikings, and number six, the Chicago Bears. I would probably make the case that the Miami Dolphins have the best situation right now. Brian Flores oddly just got let go after a 9-8 season, a season where he won seven games in a row. They finished winning eight of their last nine football games. So that opening with that team that went 9-8, it's not a bad position. That's a spot where if I was a head coach, I certainly be looking into. Miami's a fun, you know, vibrant city. They've got a quarterback in Tua that, no, he's not an elite quarterback, but he's proven he can win you some games. I like that defense. I still like some of their weapons. I feel like Miami should have been at the top of the list. Jacksonville, I understand because you have Trevor Lawrence, you have James Robinson, and you're going to have another top pick. So you're getting in that infusion of young talent. And Jacksonville probably, for me, is the second best opening. Because at least you're kind of turning around that situation. Probably not expecting a lot after a disastrous season. But that is a situation that can improve. And when you have another top pick, you're going to start loading up some of that talent. So Jacksonville, for me, is number two. Number three, I feel like, should be, depending on who the quarterback is, should be the Denver Broncos. I feel like Denver with an elite quarterback is really steps away from being pretty damn good. But that's kind of up in the air. So right now, if you have that opening, I don't put them above the Las Vegas Raiders. So I'm going to go number three, the Raiders being the next best job opening. They're in the postseason. But is Rich Bisaccia going to stay? Are they going to look elsewhere? I don't know why they look elsewhere, because what he's done with all the off-field troubles, with all the chaotic things that even happened on the field, the Raiders in the postseason for the first time since 2016. So if that is an opening, that is definitely the next best spot. Number four, I will go with the Denver Broncos. I just feel like being in the Mile High City, they still got a lot of weapons. They've got a great defense. It's a desirable city to be in. And I feel like any coach out there, hopefully an offensively minded coach for Denver when they're hiring their next man, could take over that team and really push them back into contention. I know as Kansas City fans, you don't want that to happen, and I'm not saying that, but for the sake of the NFL, for the Broncos to be good, it's going to have to come from an offensively minded head coach. I think that's the fourth best opening with the weapons they have. Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Jerry Jeudy, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams. They need a quarterback, and they don't have that right now. Last two spots, Minnesota and Chicago Bears. I feel like the Vikings have the better spot of Chicago, so I do not disagree that Chicago has the worst job opening right now. Listen, Minnesota, you still got Adam Thielen. You got Justin Jefferson. Kirk Cousins has been, I think, better than what people think. You know, he's not a star-studded quarterback, but he puts up the numbers. And he is due to be on contract for one more year. So you could take over Minnesota, you know, win 10, maybe 11 games, get into the wild card spot, compete against Green Bay in the NFC North. We don't know if Aaron Rodgers is coming back, but I feel like Minnesota has the edge right now over Chicago. The reason I agree with this list of Chicago being last is, aside from Justin Fields, what right now gives you confidence that the Bears can turn it around rather quickly? I like David Montgomery. I like Darnell Mooney. But the Bears, they never really give you that spark, that flare that goes, they're on the doorstep. They made the postseason with Mitch Trubisky and then had the double doink and lost against Philly. This year, they were probably one of the most boring teams to watch in the NFL. Had to watch Andy Dalton take a lot of snaps. Right? That's not fun to see. Justin Fields, yeah, he had some electric moments, but a lot of the times it was a guy just not working with much. And the Bears were offensively stagnant. The defense, yeah, they could play great. They had some bigger wins midway through the season. But in the end, they just weren't that fun to watch. And I don't see them being that much more fun to watch unless they really start spending, getting some weapons for Justin Fields. The city of Chicago, it's a great football city to be in. It's a great sports city to be in. So it's not going to be a job anybody would turn down in the NFL. I just feel like with the talent around them right now, they probably have the worst spot to go to in the NFL. But I think number one, it has to be Miami. I don't know why Brian Flores is gone. Brian Flores may get one of those jobs. I feel like I'd be calling him if I was one of those six teams. You know, I know I said defensive or offensive coach for Denver. Wouldn't be shocked to see them look into Brian Flores. Maybe the Raiders were looking to Brian Flores, but I think he's far from being done in the NFL. But right now, you know, the article has Jacksonville the best spot, Raiders the second best spot, the Dolphins the third best spot, Denver the fourth, Minnesota the fifth, Chicago the sixth. I had Minnesota and Chicago as the two worst spots. I had Vegas as the three. I had Denver as the four. Number two, I had Jacksonville, and the best spot to go to, I think, is Miami. With that, it is now time for our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. Five questions, five takes, under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, Fact or Fiction, Nick Saban wins 10 national titles.
So seven right now, correct?
Yes.
I mean, I think Alabama's going to be in the college football playoff for as long as he's there. That's going to be a lot more opportunities to win a national championship. I think he's probably got, he is a lot older than I think he is. I think he's in his 70s. I feel like I am going to look that up real quick. Nick Saban is 70 exactly. He could coach another 8 to 10 years. If Alabama can absolutely win three national titles in 10 years. So I think fact, Nick Saban will get to 10 national titles at Alabama.
Fact or fiction, KU gets more than 15 points from its front court tonight.
That's literally asking David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot to give you 8 apiece. Get 8 points each, 8 rebounds each. I think Kansas wins that game. Do I think that's going to happen? I'm going to go fiction. I think one of them will play better tonight, but I think the other will probably give you less than 5 points off the bench. So I do go fiction. I don't think the front court gives you that much tonight.
Fact or fiction, the lower seeds covering the AFC wildcard games on Saturday.
So the Saturday slate is first with the Raiders and the Bengals. The Bengals are a 5.5-point favorite, and the Patriots and the Bills. The Bills are a 4.5-point favorite. One of those games isn't going to be very close, I feel like. And I'm leaning towards the Bengals and the Raiders. I think the Bengals win that game by 10 to 14 points, so the Raiders won't cover. I see the Bills and Patriots being decided by 5. So I actually think that both the Bills and the Bengals win that game. So I'm going to go fiction. I don't think either of those teams playing will cover against the higher seed.
Fact or fiction, Rich Bisaccia will remain as the head coach for the Raiders.
I mean, if they let him walk, that's kind of ridiculous. What he's done has been very impressive. What he's had to deal with has been very impressive. I feel like, fact, the Raiders understand that even if they lose Cincinnati in the first round, the wild card round, Rich Bisaccia has to be back next season.
Fact or fiction, the Chiefs defense will not allow more than 24 points in a postseason game.
You see, I just feel like they're going to face some really great offenses. And you know what? The defense, there's going to be a time they give up over 24 points. It will be a shootout, whether it be an AFC divisional game, AFC championship, or the Super Bowl. If they get there, I feel like there will be at least one shootout, and this defense won't have the best game. So I'll go fiction. They're not going to hold every single team under 24 points. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.